Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the June 15 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Ellen Dearden of AgriView and Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing. Both of them are out of Morton, Illinois, along with Todd Hubbs. He's from right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus at the U of I and serves as University of Illinois' Commodity Market Specialist. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online and listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Todd Hubbs, let's start with you. Do you have a reaction that we should consider after the tariffs were announced today by the Trump administration on Chinese products?
Well, I think the market's been pricing in this for a while now. We've seen both soybean and corn prices run down over the last couple of weeks. I think people are getting out of long positions because they knew this was coming. And I think what we've seen, particularly in soybeans, but in corn as well, is this wicked combination of trade uncertainty combined with a really good start to the growing season. And I think corn just sort of got caught up in the anxiety there a little bit. And yeah, it's been going down for a while, and I think it's all just been setting up, getting out of long positions with this $50 billion worth of tariffs in place. It's pretty much a guarantee China is going to retaliate. I would be shocked if soybeans weren't on that list. It's the most leverage I think they have, both politically and economically. So it's going to happen in all probability.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how all that this plays out. However, the trade doesn't seem to be, at least for the day, and as you said, you think they built it in over the last week or
so. Yeah, it's been happening for 14 sessions, basically, it looks like. Or 15, maybe. Maybe it's just 10
cents. Is it low enough at the moment, in your opinion?
I feel like both corn and soybeans are a little lower, oversold. Just based on the fundamentals, yes, we have, China takes a lot of our soybeans, and we're export to a few other countries, but in soybeans in particular. But even this year, we're going to hit the 2.065 billion bushels that USDA is projecting for this marketing year in exports. Now, will that be lower next year? It very well could be, but if Brazil's sending a larger percentage of their huge crop that they are putting out to China, you know, we'll pick up some here and there. So yeah, if we have a huge crop this year in soybeans, and we're a long way from that being in the bins, so to take all the weather premium out and all the trade uncertainty, for me right now, it feels like for soybeans, we might be a little bit oversold. I understand the dynamic, but we'll see what happens over the next few weeks. Corn, the fundamentals on corn are really strong for a price move upwards. I think they just got caught up in a general commodity down push. I mean, China, they take less than 1% of our corn exports. You know, I'm more worried about Mexico putting a tariff on. This marketing year, they've done about 27% of our corn exports to Mexico. So, you know, with the ethanol grind we've seen, the export number just got raised another 75 million bushels, and that's well within the realm of possibility. Moving into next year, you could see similar ethanol grind levels to slightly higher. USDA is projecting them slightly higher, but regardless, we're seeing a lot of use in corn. Barring just a monster crop at the acreage we're currently at, or even if we increase it just a little bit, we're still getting down to that 10 to 12% stocks to use ratio for the 18-19 marketing year. So I think we've taken a lot of the price out of corn. And I think you'll see it maybe turn around in the next few sessions.
You know, so Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef, Todd Hubbs, has just told us he believes that most of what the trade expected was already built into the marketplace prior to the time that the Trump administration released its actual $50 billion in tariffs. Do you agree with that?
I would agree with that. I think a lot of it was digested. Prior to this announcement, beans had dropped well over a dollar in about 13 trading sessions. So obviously a large part of that was already built in. Where we go from here, I think, depends on the market's perception, which might take a little while, of, okay, now that this is out, is that going to spur additional talks to get this thing to a resolution, or are both sides going to dig their heels in and this thing's going to turn uglier? So I think it's a dynamic thing, I guess, is what I'm saying. I think a large part of it was factored in. I think that, at its heart, it doesn't really affect corn and wheat that much anyway. And, today's price action would kind of dictate that, that's a bigger concern to the market on the bean side than it is corn and wheat anyway. So, again, I can't spin it as friendly. Hopefully a large part of it is factored in, and hopefully within a couple weeks, it spurs some additional talks on both sides and getting closer to a resolution on this thing.
Hey, Ellen Dearden from AgriView. What did you make of the USDA WASDE numbers as they were released on Tuesday?
USDA's WASDE report offered a couple of surprises to me, and I thought one of the big surprises was there was no change in the Ukraine corn crop. Like, really? All we've done is talk about how dry things are in the Ukraine and Russia, and Ukraine's a major corn player, so not making a change there was kind of a big surprise to me. We're finally pretty well ratcheted down the Brazilian corn crop, so that probably wasn't a big surprise, but at least USDA is finally making some acknowledgement there. I think the fact that USDA raised the Brazilian bean crop as much as they did probably was a surprise. It was kind of on the high end of even the private trade estimates at 119. So, that seemed pretty high to me. As far as the domestic side of things, I think we need to keep in mind that, the supply-demand ratio has really changed and really shows that we need to produce a pretty significant crop both on the corn and bean side in the U.S. this year to keep things on the world side pretty even. The use on corn has continued to be relatively strong, and USDA on this last WASDE report did show that feed use in both corn and wheat was expected to be lower. And if that's the case with as many cattle as we have on feed, with feedlots being pretty darn full, and more hog numbers and more poultry numbers, that seems a little odd to me. I'm not sure what these animals are supposed to be eating with feed demand down in both categories.
So all of that put together caused a 105 million bushel drop in the corn ending stocks for 2018-19. I think 82, if I remember correctly, for old crop or something thereabouts. Those numbers surprised the marketplace a little bit, and it reacted some. A dime move on 100 million bushels, I suppose, is about right for the midpoint. If the midpoint for the is actually 1.5 or 1.6 for the carryout. Fundamentally, however, this puts us in a much tighter supply than we've had for several years.
Mm-hmm. The supply is tighter, and I just think every time you're seeing demand increase and supplies stay steady even or to go lower, as USDA suggests, we ought to be lifting prices, and that certainly was not the case this particular week. Really had kind of a choppy price action, and that somewhat concerning with Thursday afternoon when the big break that we've seen, and that's really all trade related and maybe a little weather related, because the weather looks pretty darn benign for the next week or so as we move toward key pollination times in a good portion of the southern Corn Belt.
Hey, Chip, let's stay with the weather because growing degree days have been piling up. This weather has just pushed the corn crop, at least in the central part of the state of Illinois, along, I think, across the whole of the Corn Belt. In fact, by the end of this month, we should be in the middle of silk for our part of the world. And that's really moving fast.
It is. We've sped this crop along. For the time being, that's probably a good thing. We've had some ample rainfall in many areas of the state. This system that moved through yesterday that was, in my mind, kind of a pop-up surprise, inch to four-inch type of an event across a big chunk of Iowa and at least a pretty good portion of Illinois. And by the way, some very dry areas of Illinois and Iowa that had been missing rain got rain yesterday. That wasn't hardly in any forecast. That was a little bit of a game changer. I think where we're at on the calendar right now, pretty good. I would think that, at least a large chunk of Illinois, you'd have to say that we're off to the best start ever and probably have record potential, but yet there's a long way to go. It is going to get hot. There's no question about that. And the question is, how long does that last? Is that high pressure ridge going to set up and dominate the rest of June and the first half of July and push us up near triple digits, or is it a five-day deal? And then it relaxes while more rain comes through. That remains to be seen, and that's going to be the key, I think, going forward. But you have to think where we're at right now, we're sitting pretty good. And it looks like, at least at this stage, mid-June, makings of a big crop, yet we've got a long growing season ahead of us still.
Todd, can you define the monster crop for me? I mean, in combination of yield with current acreage or with an acreage increase in a normal yield?
Even if we did last year's 176.6 again nationally on the current acreage, we're still got use set up to drive it down, below 1.6, 1.7 billion bushel carryout into 18.19. Now, if we expand acreage significantly, and we'll find out on June 29th, and I suggest your listeners tune into our webinar. Scott and I do a webinar on the June acreage and grain stocks report.
You can find that at Farm Doc Daily to sign up, though it wasn't there this morning, but should be shortly.
It's there, I think so. But it should be there shortly. We'll be talking about the reports in detail. Even with those kind of numbers, unless we get a big acreage increase, we're still see a really strong use. And at these kind of corn prices, I don't expect to see exports or ethanol grind or even, our feed use slow down too much. So when you combine it with troubles in the world in wheat, corn's a really cheap feed grain. I just see that corn demand's going to be pretty strong over the next year.
You think producers ought to be thinking about at this point other than watching with interest?
I would just be watching with interest. I wouldn't be making any moves at this point. I know it feels like soybeans have fallen off a cliff and there's no way we're coming back. But hopefully, based on a lot of the talks we've had over the last few months, most farmers or producers thought about pricing soybeans early and got in when we were above 10. And just see how the growing season turns out. And see how these trade negotiations turn. It's looking horrible right now, but you never know what's going to happen the next
few months.
Right.
The big fear, as you said, is that NAFTA would fall apart and the Mexican government would decide to throw a tariff on corn.
Yeah, and soybeans and pork and beef. I mean, it would not be good. It feels like we're sort of trending that way, but I think the negotiations on NAFTA are going to continue through the summer. Right. I don't see that.
There was news earlier in the week that they plan to, though they didn't set dates, that they would be continuing.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see a NAFTA fall apart in the next few months. That's what I'm hoping doesn't happen. And hopefully we'll get some resolution in the fall. But, the Chinese tariffs, it's worrisome for ag in particular because we're the target. And the Chinese have said they're going to retaliate. And then the administration said if they retaliated, we were going to lay more tariffs on them. And I mean, that's just a classic tit-for-tat trade war that leads to a downward spiral. So hopefully we don't get into that scenario.
Hey, Alan, it seems to me that the corn market in particular feels as if it's in mid to late July rather than mid to late June at this point. Where do you think we are as it relates to the regular normal timings or seasonals?
We may be closer to July 4th than the calendar shows. I think we're probably about 2 weeks ahead on the seasonal, but I don't know. I'm really have thought in the corn side of things, at least the structure of the market didn't look particularly negative, like the bean structure has spread-wise has looked really pretty negative for about 6 weeks now. So I've really been thinking that we would see a counter-seasonal move in the corn higher as we got into the end of the summer. Whether that would extend into September, I wasn't sure, but I still think that we still stand a good chance to see another rally in corn later in this summer.
And for soybeans, I take it you're not nearly as optimistic?
I'm not nearly as optimistic. And beans really depend on the meal to be the driver. And notice that we gapped higher 6 weeks ago. We filled that gap. Really, we peaked that meal market about 6 weeks ago. We gapped up about 10 weeks ago. And we just haven't been able to get much traction on the meal. So we've been down for 6 weeks in meal. And that's just, it's tough on the bean market to be able to rally unless the meal would happen to catch here. And it doesn't look real positive for a meal market to hold right here where we are now.
Well, what are the fundamentals that drove that move lower in the meal market? I mean, we understand what happened with the Argentine soybean crop, and that was the fundamental to the upside, but I'm not sure why it wouldn't have plateaued or at least only settled back.
I think what happened is the Europeans really came in and bought this meal market very heavily in the end of the first quarter. Really, I heard about it in December that the Rotterdam meal buyers were very short bought, and then as soon as the Argentine soy crop looked to have gone south, they bought, and I think they probably bought an awful lot of meal, and so once that they felt like they were covered enough to be confident to be able to source meal, the meal market just fizzled. So I think that's kind of what happened, and maybe it was more by the rumor that things are bad and, you know, get a lot covered, and then the need wasn't there.
Speaking of needs, any thoughts that end users might want to lock in either corn or bean meal needs?
I'm locking in corn needs right now for livestock feeders. I don't expect that there's a whole lot of downside risk between now and the first part of September. Meal needs, I've been buying a little bit of meal, but I'm not covering meal needs out as far as I want in the corn.
Chip, I want to stay with soybeans for just a moment. Do you think that the dollar we've lost in the soybean market has allowed U.S. soybeans to stay competitive at this point on the international market, or at least put it in a position where they might be competitive in the future?
Yeah, that's the key, and I think that's why the bean market's dropped. Right now, you would have to say we really aren't. I mean, that's going to be a give and take on a daily and weekly basis with where the cash price out of Brazil is. Right now, it still favors Brazil. You have to look at this, though, from if I'm sitting in the other shoe and I'm sitting in China, thinking, hey, is there any reason to believe that this thing is going to get worked out? It's a massive buying opportunity. So I think it's two-sided. The real answer to your question is, I don't think that we're quite competitive just yet based on where the cash price is out of Brazil, but that doesn't mean that Chinese buyers aren't sitting there saying, hey, at a certain point, we're going to have to take a stab at this and get long this market in anticipation of, still eventually going to take U.S. beans anyway. So a lot of dynamics at play there. But I think that's the heart of it, though, and that's why we've dropped so far. If we don't become competitive, where China continues to buy in spite of the tariff, then we aren't going to hit the number, and we're going to increase carryout and probably end up, even where we're at here today, roughly 940 new crop bean futures will be too high if we're going to just back up the carry out and, you know, surge that higher because we're not hitting our bean export number.
Oh my gosh, you made me start to think about how this could play out. So because it's a command economy in China and the buyers are state-owned, they'll know ahead of time whether they're going to agree or not.
It could get really interesting, and that might.
So we could see. What I'm thinking is, we could see the buying begin at a much lower price before they decide to agree.
Yes, and you'll probably see the buying well ahead of the official news coming out that okay, we've got it. We've got this thing figured out.
If they do,
that's right. There's a thousand ways this could go. It's just a unique wrinkle and a lot of moving gears in this thing. And it's going to take a while for the market to figure it out. And you know, I don't think we hit a point where it's like, okay, it's black and white. We're competitive. That's as low as we need to go. It's going to be just a constant weekly adjustment based on what's the basis in Brazil and how low are we, and are we making further you know, attempts at talking and working this trade issue out. It's going to be a very dynamic situation.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, because bushels aren't going to make up for the lower price exactly this time around, like they did last fall in corn and or soybeans for producers. So there'll be a lot of work on your part and the part of farmers to try to market a crop at a higher level, I would suppose. And most of the brokers that we talked to, including you, I believe, have been advocates of making sure they were 30 to 40% sold new crop on both of those crops. So now you have a lot of heavy lifting in front of you, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you look at it, if you take away even the weather and for sure this China thing for a second, and just look at where the most recent supply and demand report came out here earlier this week, corn, you know, we have to raise a big crop. I mean, world carryouts shrank dramatically from a year ago, even with a big crop, a trend line crop, which would be the second biggest crop we've ever raised in corn. We cut the carryout compared to a year ago. So we need to have a big crop here, or we're going to continue to cut the carryout. I guess my point with that is that yeah, there's some bearishness and there's been some rain around, but at the heart, you know, I think it's a different situation in the corn market than it was last year, really for the last 3 years, because we were building stocks the last 3 years. We are cutting those stocks. Cheap prices cut back acreage and it increased production, and that's a good thing. So I don't see the corn market just falling away and never coming back like it did a year ago. I think there'll still be opportunities, notwithstanding some volatility and fluctuations around both China trade as well as NAFTA. We still have to tackle that as well.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find our programming in its entirety online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Our thanks go this week to our panelists, including Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing. He and Ellen Dearden are both from Morton, Illinois. Ellen Dearden at AgriView. And Todd Hubbs, of course, is from the University of Illinois, right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. You have a great week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.